Welcome back to Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers, the podcast devoted to exploring the frontiers of psychedelic medicine and what it takes to cultivate a healthy mind, body, and spirit. As always, Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers is brought to you by Numinous. I'm Dr. Steve Thayer, and today my co-host, Dr. Reed Robison, and I are joined by Jillian Maxwell and Richard Kay. Jillian and Richard are the co-founders and CEOs of the Sentinel Retreat and Wellness Center in British Columbia, Canada, and are founding members of the Psychedelic Association of Canada. Richard has over 20 years of personal experience working with plant-based medicines and focuses his coaching to give people the opportunity to experience their unique gifts in this world. Jillian co-founded the Canadian Drug Policy Coalition, served on the board of directors of MAPS Canada for over 10 years, and has spoken at conferences nationally and internationally. In 2012, Jillian received the Queen Elizabeth II Diamond Jubilee Medal for community service in introducing harm reduction to Vancouver and successfully advocating for InSite, North America's first supervised injection site. We had a lovely conversation with Jillian and Richard, talking about blending the ceremonial and the clinical, the role spirituality plays in psychedelic therapy, the importance of community, the work Jillian and Richard do at the Sentinel, drug policy reform, and much, much more. Jillian mentions at the end of the conversation that she and Richard recently completed the Numinous Fundamentals of Psychedelic Assisted Therapy course. If you're impressed by their review and you want to look into the course, click on the link in the show notes or go directly to numinous.com/training. You can use the code PTF10 for 10% off selected trainings. You hear Reed and I talk a lot about the different clinical trial work that Numinous does on the show. If you or someone you know is interested in being a participant in a psychedelic clinical trial, you can click on the link in the show notes or go directly to numinous.com/research to learn more about the trials we're currently running. If you'd like to support the show, you can do so by leaving us a rating or review in places like Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can always share this episode with somebody you think might like to hear it. Without further ado, I bring you Jillian Maxwell and Richard Kay. Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers. Reed and I are here with Jillian Maxwell and Richard Kay. It's great to be here with the two of you.
Great to be here, too. Thank you.
So I will have provided a short sort of bio intro in the introduction, but we'd love to just hear from the two of you. Tell us and our audience a little bit about you both. Maybe we'll start with you, Jillian.
I'm Jillian Maxwell. I live in Vancouver, British Columbia in Canada. I moved here when I was 22 from England, and I've been very involved in harm reduction and drug policy reform for over 25 years around Vancouver and our downtown East Side area. And I was introduced to psychedelics along the way and have benefited greatly from my own personal use and see that use helping others. I'm a founding member of the Psychedelic Association of Canada, and I'm also an owner and of a retreat center in British Columbia called the Sentinel Retreat and Wellness Center, and I run that and operate that with my dear husband, Richard Kay.
I've just got to throw this in here that I got to experience the Sentinel couple years ago for a medicine retreat. And like I was telling you before we started recording, it did strike me the minute I arrived there as a magical place. And I'm wondering if you could tell a bit of the story behind it. Maybe Jillian, you could tell us how it came to be.
Well, that's a long story. I'll keep it as short as possible. And it starts off actually 30 years ago, when I met Richard in this tiny little village called Caslow, British Columbia. Population then 750. It's grown to population 1,000. And we met there and started our relationship. We've been married for 30 years. And lived there for a number of years, but not all the time, in and out of there in Vancouver, and had a daughter. And it was clear to us that our life wasn't based in the country. We were, for different reasons, we were in Vancouver, and we would go to visit. But I always cried when I left there and needed to know that I was going to be going back. And so, 25 years later, We were in a training program for leadership and team building, and we had to sort of have projects, games in the world, as they were called. And so mine was, how could I get back to Caslo and spend more time there? And, I've always wanted to have a retreat center. And that's how it started. The idea came from that. And Richard is a major manifester and also a visionary too. And it grew from there. And by that time, we have been very involved with the ayahuasca community in Vancouver and around the world, really, for many, many years. And so it seemed a natural thing to be able to include plant medicines and psychedelics at the Sentinel.
Yeah, it's that's so beautiful. So you host or provide space for a variety of different medicines, I assume, in the Sentinel. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. We bring in practitioners who are experienced with different medicines, and we also work with them ourselves, the clients. So it's a combination.
Yeah. And I loved how when I was out there, you were both so kind of intimately involved with it. We would have meals together. We would jump in the lake together or be in the sauna and things like that. And the copper art, I've got to ask Richard, there's this beautiful copper work throughout, like in your maloka. I'm wondering, I think I heard that you made that art. I'm wondering if you could tell us a bit about it.
Well, actually, thank you. That's one of the creations that come out of medicine. There's the connection to the objects, whether it be driftwood or wood or the elements of copper or crystal. And so in my world, these pieces speak to me wherever they are. And it's like the maloka. The maloka said, I want to be here. This is in this place. And it's the same with the sculptures, some of them 10, 12, 14 feet tall. And they come together in where they want to be placed and how they want to be seen. And so if I could say it this way, they develop through their own creation, and they have these hands and this body and these minds put all these pieces together. And so where they come from, they speak their own language, and I'm just fortunate to be the vessel that's able to put them together.
We have a lot of dragons around the place, Richard has created.
Yeah. I one other thing that I've noticed in the medicine work we do, my personal work, is an object is an object. And at some point, through whatever means, there's a sort of activation of that, whether it be a rattle or, the feather or a talking stick. These things, there's an energetic activation, like in being in relationships. So they actually, there's a symbiotic relationship. It's not in there in the beginning. It's like a friendship. You meet somebody, and in the beginning, you're sort of, okay, there's a little peace, mm-hmm. and then you get to know each other, and then there's more relationships happening. So, these relationships that we have, or I have with Jillian, it's like that, that connection's there.
That's beautiful. Reminds me of what Thich Nhat Hanh would say, in the sunlight of awareness, everything becomes sacred. And yeah, just like an object becoming activated or a relationship becoming special or sacred. Yeah.
And speaking of the medicines, we have a number of protocols, but one of the basic ones is that, working with 5-MeO-DMT or Jaguar to open up the subject matter for the client and also releasing it. It has a wonderful ability to be able to identify any stuckness or blockages and release those pieces. And the reason why we use these pieces is so for the client, it sets up the subject matter for the following day, which is a longer period of 6 to 8 hours, but they're already going in there with their primary piece that they're working on. So we're able to go through that stage. And the second day is usually a number of medicines and last 6 to 8 hours and supported by Jillian and myself, if we're doing it, or one of our other practitioners.
Can you speak to what kind of medicines? It sounds like day one, or the first medicine day anyway, would be a 5-MeO DMT experience. Is that right? And then a longer journey the next day with one or more medicines?
It's true. And I want to put in here, first of all, that the actual relationship starts way before that. Mm-hmm. There's intakes, there's family and medical history, there's being in relationship again before we even the safety of the client, yeah. Everything's put in place. And then we feel that safety is connection there, we'll go into the 5-MeO on the first night of the medicine. And then second day, we may do something. It depends on the client and their intake form and everything. But generally, if a healthy subject would be 3-MMC, either a psilocin or a psilocybin. So one would be 4-ACO as a analog, or 3.5 to 4 grams of psilocybin mushrooms. And then about an hour or two later, 2 hours later, it would be, well, when the client is ready, you know, it's very watchful. It's like we say numbers and everything, but what we want to be doing is being connection of where the client's at. And at that point, we would use MDMA. And why would we use it in that manner? Because first of all, 3-MMC, it's the empathogen, it opens up and it's that more calmness with the client.
Yeah, I love using it at the end, particularly because MDMA, because it's a soft landing and it helps them kind of pull together everything that's been going on through the session and putting threads together. And that's also a time when generally I work with them if the opportunity is there, and it's not always, but to help them weave those threads together or to make sense of something or to do some inner child work. And so it's a lovely way to complete it.
I've got to say, just pointing out the contrast between, in clinic, in our research clinic, we're doing a 5-MeO DMT study, as I mentioned, for severe depression, treatment-resistant depression. We're doing psilocybin studies. The MDMA studies have wound down while waiting for approval, but we're so bound by the protocol and the regulations and the one medicine at a time. I just wanted to say, I look forward to the day, which may be a long ways off, to when we can combine things more creatively in clinic on an individualized basis. That's really exciting.
Totally. We have to go through this process. We have to go through this legalizing regulatory stuff, but at the same time, at the moment, it's extremely restrictive, and you just know that it would be way more helpful for the client's benefit to do a combination, and you can't. And so I'm hoping that day comes sooner than we anticipate, actually, Reed. I hope it's going to be a lot sooner, because it's all about taking care of the person and the client and the patient, whatever we want to call them. And that really is the first priority. Yeah.
Steve and I talk about this where with Freud and others, that really important sacred baby, if you will, was thrown out with the bathwater in many ways. But one of the beautiful things about this psychedelic renaissance that we're experiencing is, we talk about the mystical experience. We go far beyond symptoms in the conversation and talk about even the sacred, which I think is a beautiful thing to see unfolding.
It's essential, really, for where we're at in our evolution as a species. And we've completely lost that, particularly in our culture here in the West. And you can see the impact of that. People are disembodied. They don't feel connected to others, and they do terrible things, and it doesn't occur to them that they're even terrible. They don't look at the planet as being, they don't think of all our relations. They just think it's them. It's just about them. And that's the biggest gift that these medicines can give people, is that sense of belonging and connection and not being alone.
Yeah.
Essential, actually. Yeah.
That's beautiful. I just returned a few days ago from a little personal retreat to India. And what struck me was what you're describing, Jillian, the how much the people are connected to each other and the sacred. And, you know, every taxi cab has a little altar on the dashboard, and, you know, every temple has people in reverence, you know, praying, chanting, bowing to these beloved deities and teachers. Yeah. So, it struck me actually.
Grateful to be alive.
Yeah. It struck me. I call my trip Indiawaska sometimes, because I'm still integrating.
Yeah, I bet. We were there a couple of years ago, and I had to go into hospital. I was dehydrated. And I was fine in the end, but the care that I received there was the medicine. They did their, I got onto drips and things, but it was the people. They would come in and touch me and look at me and actually care how I was and have a conversation with me. And it was really quite amazing, the difference of that.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah, we can learn a lot from them.
So when we talk about this topic, Reed and I have discussed sort of spirit and bringing spirituality back into mental health care, I always get curious, and I'm curious about your take on the potential shadow side of that. You know, there's a quote from a person named Robert Henry that I like. I just pulled it up. He says, "Join no creed, but respect all of them for the truth that is in them." And it's the join no creed part that stands out to me. Because there's probably a difference between, you know, spirituality and an affiliation to or an adherence to a particular religious dogma or an ideology.
Just in relation to what you were saying, Steve, about the shadow side and the sort of the culty guru kind of place that people can go, I think that's... I actually think that's what plant medicines can help you avoid, because you're not really following a person, a leader. You're actually communicating with a plant or a molecule, and it's very internal. And you're actually having the experience of you and your inner healer and all of that going on. And so, sure, it's helpful to have a Jillian or a Richard at the end, helping them make some sense of it, or in the months to come, you know, what does that mean in their life? But it's very much their own process, and they arrive at wherever they arrive themselves without having to listen to somebody telling them things and saying, follow me, in order to feel whatever it is they're trying to feel. So unless you have somebody who's actually purposefully wanting to create a following and thinks that they're a guru and thinks that they're that, in which case, of course, but that happens. That's just people being human and, you know, doing their thing.
People doing their thing, huh?
Doing their thing, yeah.
I like what, I think it was William Blake who said, he is only, about Jesus, he is only God, and so am I, and so are you.
Exactly.
And there was this other little line I read once that struck me. It said, to shape God, shape self. I'm wondering what you two think of that.
Well, I think it's finding the God within, finding without being precious or precocious about it, just realizing that there is the essence of the divine in everything. That's how it all exists, nature. And so it's not a big thing. It's simply accepting that and allowing that to be and not making it into something it isn't. Just going, I see, I get it. Wow, imagine that. And then just noticing it wherever you go.
Yeah. It was, I think, there's a Carl Jung nugget of wisdom. He said, if our religion is based on salvation, the chief emotions will be fear and trembling. But if our religion is based on wonder, then our chief emotion will be gratitude. And things will be very different. Yeah.
Exactly. And if you look at a child, a newborn and young children that, you know, have had a safe, secure first experience of life, that's where they are. They're full of wonder and curiosity. Mm-hmm. And great gratitude, yeah.
The medicines help you reclaim that sense of wonder, right?
Very much.
Blow the lid off our self-imposed limitations in some ways. Huh?
Very much, yeah. So we were, I've already mentioned that we're members of the board of the Psychedelic Association of Canada. And we recently had a meeting, a summit, that we brought together some board members and other people to talk about actually this issue of, we've done really well with launching psychedelics and plant medicines for mental health. It's the train has left the station and it's happening, maybe not in quite the way or the speed we'd like, but it's still launched. And then how can we bring the spiritual aspect back into the mainstream? And we had this amazing 4 or 5 days together talking about that and exploring it. It was really quite fascinating. And ultimately, we had a wonderful experience. You've actually met him, I believe, Reid, a really lovely elder that lives in the area of Caslow, Duncan Grady.
Oh, yeah. Amazing human. Wow. Yeah,
amazing human. So he came and helped us in the beginning with talking to us for a couple of hours about all of that and just made it really clear. He set the stage, and then we had some of our local practitioners. We had a pipe ceremony, had a cacao ceremony, we had some breathing, some sound healing, and it was all in service of having us experience the divine in every moment, and realizing, particularly from Duncan's teachings, that we just have got it the wrong way round and about this doing thing. And if we only were able to just be, and more being, and coming from being and doing, and then the having is taken care of by starting off with being, To me, the conversations went in great different directions, and it occurred to me that actually the spiritual aspect of working with plant medicines and psychedelics is very much alive, and of course it's with our indigenous tribes, people all over the world, in Canada, but also in other parts of the world, of course, and really what the job of the Psychedelic Association is to connect more deeply with them and see how we can support them and bring their work more into the focus, because it's happening already. We don't have to invent it. That would be rude when they brought it to us. And so how can we support them what I was left with.
Oh, wow. So since you brought up Elder Duncan, I've got to just say that that visit I got to have with him was so special. I'll never forget it. And what he said, and I loved how he said, "Don't credit me. Credit these are teachings of they're Blackfeet teachings, and that have been passed on to him." And he said things like, "You're not going to find the great mystery in a book, and the mind will try to explain things, but consider the possibility that the medicine is in you, and it points you in and down towards being, not doing." And that was beautiful, and just one little nugget of wisdom from so many that just blew my mind sitting and basking in his teachings.
Yeah, we were very grateful to spend time with him, and he actually laid out the sort of the blueprint for moving forward.
And so on the association, maybe you can share a bit about the purpose and the focus, because I had the chance to give a couple webinars with Pam Kriskow on psychedelics and eating disorders for the Psychedelic Association of Canada. And it was so neat because you can feel the people involved and how, you know, engaged and intentional and purpose driven they are. And so I was really struck by this, loving, important crusade of that association.
Thank you. Yeah. So how it came about was, I think in 2018, we got together a group of people. They came to the Sentinel in our beautiful Maloka, our roundhouse temple. And we talked and did some medicine together to just look at what was happening in the psychedelic and plant medicine world in Canada and how could we support it. And that was how the Psychedelic Association was born from that. And we particularly had two pieces that we that were motivating us. One was the unfortunate way that cannabis ultimately was legalized in Canada. It could have been done quite differently, and it went corporate, and all the people who had been involved for years, decades, and the experts that knew really everything were just basically thrown under the bus. And we didn't want that to happen in the psychedelic world, in plant medicine world. And also just the how to legitimize with and bringing the same, similar, actually, and bringing the already existing practitioners, we call them the underground, but it's, I like already existing better, into above ground, being being accepted and actually appreciated for their work and their experience. And so that those were the two, which was done very badly, of course, with cannabis again. So we really wanted to make it different and play a role in having that be different in Canada. That's what got us started.
Very cool. And how is drug policy reform going in Canada? We're much more familiar with it being in the U.S. and these state-by-state differences, but we just had a conversation with Rick Doblin within the last couple of weeks on this show, and yeah. his activism is so inspiring and contagious, and I was just wondering how it's going up there north of the border.
Yeah, I mean, Rick is just an inspiration to all of us, and we would not be here without him having this conversation. And so north of the border, it's a really interesting experience to be around as long as I have, working in the same field, drug policy reform, and, you know, going to conferences or listening to people talking about the same issues that we were talking about 30 years ago and gave very good arguments why it needs to change. And we're still having the same conversation going on. And so it's just human nature. There's people that, you know, have difficulties understanding things or have points of view that are absolutely entrenched. And some of them their points of view can be changed with information. And sometimes there's a reason why they want to keep that point of view for whatever it is. And so so we were ahead, really doing really well with harm reduction and some drug policy changes, I would say 20 years ago. And there's been a pushback, which I think we're seeing, you're certainly experiencing in the U.S. with, you know, different the chasm between the two just getting bigger and bigger. And it's similar here. And we'll probably have a change of government in the next year or so, which will be a more conservative right-wing, I guess, point of view about things like drug policy and people who use drugs. And so I'm not very hopeful about that at the moment. At the same time, in Vancouver and British Columbia, they decided to decriminalize possession of cocaine and crystal meth and something else, and MDMA, which no one knows why they included MDMA. It's not exactly a street drug that the street people in the street that I see use all the time, and heroin, of course. But that's what they did. And so we have this sort of interesting decriminalization of those drugs to see if that helps. It's supposed to, the whole point was to help street users not be hassled and have their lives disrupted by police enforcement. So it's sort of a push. It goes forward in one way and then backwards in another way. It's just kind of human nature. I have to accept that, which as I'm getting a little older, maybe I'm more accepting, although I think I get more impatient. It's like, come on, enough already. We know what works. We know what keeps people alive and what makes them healthy. And we're doing the opposite. So it's a hard one.
Yeah,
Well, I think we're living in amazing times. We're, you know, that we have this, you guys talking here, and we have the retreat centers happening, and there's a huge interest in psychedelics. And actually, the interest is really about that, going back to the spiritual part of it, is people seeing themselves as spiritual beings. And then the reconnection of everybody where they're actually wanting to come back to community. I mean, this is something we did thousands of years ago, sat around in the fire, and we just communed with each other, and we shared that. We're communal beings. So, you know, and I, you know, I'm fortunate. I've got Jillian's, you're 70 in 2 weeks, right? And that's an amazing experience. I mean, we've spent, you know, 30 years together in marriage, and we've worked together about 5 of those years. And it's, you know, to go through that experience, the ups and downs, and what takes Richard out or what takes Jillian out, and be able to sort of use all that as a an educational vehicle, you know, a relationship as my personal growth in relationship, then that, you know, we're very fortunate to be able to do that and share that together. You know, it's one of the most blessed things to have is a relationship or friendship where you can actually listen and share and be part and stand for the other person and still be an individual. So it's like these are the things that can come out of medicine work. They can enhance medicine. They can enhance the life through medicine. So I'm just really grateful. I have such gratitude for a life and the ability to be able to just be present to what's unfolding at this time in history.
You answered a question I had burning in me, Richard, about how psychedelics have impacted your journey as what I view, having been in retreat with you both, as a really inspiring duo, a power couple, if you will, teaching from your experiences in yourself and like hosting with love. And Jillian, I'm wondering how your upcoming birthday feels to you. anything you can share?
Well, there's lots of things to share. Just before I go there, I do feel like community is essential, and that's what we, again, have lost in our society these days. And so we're going back to those ancient times of sangha and community and around the fire. And I think that's what ayahuasca taught us. It's hard because these medicines are not just, it's not just the medicine. It's sure, it opens the door, but you need support, and there's, you may have shifted a lot and a lot of trauma may have been released, but there's still those old habits that are just entrenched in the system. And so it's really helpful to have support from others to work through that. And our relationship has been incredibly sustaining, I think, for our growth, for sure. And my birthday is coming up. And so, yes, I'm 70 in April. And that's a big number. And there's many ways of looking at that. And somebody said to me, well, being an elder isn't necessarily being older. And I think I like that the best. And so I'm happy to be an elder, and I'm happy to, you know, play a role for people of all ages with whatever wisdom I picked up along the way. And it's not been easy approaching this number. And it's all in the mind. I mean, it's just ridiculous, actually, but it is in the mind and it is present. And just recently, I was very fortunate enough to spend some time in Mexico, and I attended an Ibogaine retreat. And it was a 5-day amazing experience. And one of the things that I got from that very long medicine session was that I've had a really happy life, and there's been many wonderful things in it. And Ibogaine is great because you can actually, it's almost like an empathogen, you're actually observing, way different from ayahuasca, where you're just like full on But I felt like I was observing all these amazing things and all these very amazing things I won't go into details of. But it was, it woke me up to, Gillian, you've had a happy life. Like, you've had wonderful things happen to you. Remember? It's like, oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's and, you know, there's been some other shit stuff, sure. But no, of course I have. And it's imbued me with this sense of just appreciation even more. And so the age thing has the issue about the age thing or the concern has actually diminished as a result.
You brought up a very good thing, the remember who you are.
Yeah.
Right. It's like remembering.
Yeah. We're very fortunate.
Yeah.
So was Ibogaine scary for you? Was that your first experience, by the way? And were you worried about it? Was it difficult in some ways?
It was my second experience. Richard and I experienced iboga about 8 years ago, which was actually quite difficult. Ibogaine is very different. It's I thought it was a synthesizer. It's not. They've simply taken one of the alkaloids out of the many that iboga has. It was the same in length, so it goes on for like over 20 hours. But having done it once, I wasn't so nervous about it. I had some concerns about my heart physically, but these guys, they just take it. Ambio is the company that you go to, and well, I can't speak enough about how well they took care of me. It was really beautiful, and I had heart monitors on. Everybody did, and it was a very different experience, though, and one that. So I went to actually help my brain after COVID. Was a little sort of felt like there were some, you know, little holes in it here and there, and just to sort some things out, some personal things out, and I did all of those things. Actually, it was quite an amazing experience, and again, I went with two friends and four women, two of them I know really well, and that was also part of it. And we, you know, talk about it subsequently, and I was surrounded with people I know down there, they're friends of mine that ran it, and so. It was a community, wonderful experience as well.
Beautiful. Yeah. I think it's Nolan Williams, a researcher in California, who's done some work on Ibogaine. He said once in an interview that, you know, it's the most intelligent or advanced medicine or technology he's ever encountered. When he's looking at brain scans, it's like, we could not dream this stuff up. We couldn't design something like Ibogaine.
We're not intelligent enough. Yeah. I do truly feel that. I do feel actually privileged to have had that experience, and it wasn't easy. And some of my, you know, colleagues or friends, I think had a harder time than I had, but at the end it's like, yeah, I'd do that again. Because it gets you to amazing new places, and you just know it's good for the brain. I mean, the Stanford research that they did with Ambio about a year ago, that they released at the MAPS conference last year, they talk about, that's what drew me in. They talked about the brain getting 1.3 years younger. As a result of having it, it's like, oh,
that was good. Interesting.
That was interesting to me because it's just giving my brain a break. I mean, there's so much been coming at it for many decades now. It's like, oh, that would be a nice break. And I think my brain liked it. Yeah.
I love what you said about remembering too. It actually brings me full circle to sitting in your maloka there at the Sentinel with Elder Duncan, saying one of the purposes of life and teachings from the Blackfeet people is that life is to remember or rejoin. Mm-hmm. And there's no place to get to. I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah, that's incredible, because there's the elder's teaching, and Duncan would say, this came from the Blackfeet. He wouldn't say it's coming from me. He says, my elders. So when you speak to it, it's like this comes from a lineage and a lineage of lineages. And it's a beautiful thing to remember. So, yeah, listen to our elders. They have a lot of knowledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, one other thing that I remember from that special experience was when he was talking about love, because you were talking about your journey as a couple, and he said something that the two big vulnerable acts of love are allowing and receiving, like allowing yourself to be and to receive. And even if you have no clue what that means, he said that like the veil will get really thin and you'll realize, like I think you were mentioning earlier, Richard, you'll realize that you are what you always were. You are what you were looking for. And that act of love, including the receiving love, not just giving it, is the ultimate vulnerability.
Yeah, this definitely shows up in the medicine work. We're very good. You know, we notice that we're good at giving out. But there's the piece in the actual giving to allow that cycle to come right back in the receiving cycle. And this is like a pump, it sort of generates. Mm. But we tend to stop it at 3/4 mark. And this receiving, for me personally, I recently had a very personal experiences around this last year of learning to receive. And it sounds easy, but I promise you it wasn't easy. And the medicine really took me through that journey. But what happens in my experience is that whole cycle allows for an energetic flow to start to happen, giving, receiving. So there's a science to it. I don't know what the science is. That's my experience.
Bet you do. Bet you guys know what the science is.
Well, we're just trying to figure out what's already known and what many of these cultures, and especially in the East, have been practicing and talking about for eons.
Yeah, there's a lot in these medicines. And when you spoke of ibogaine before and the technology of that, and when we talk about 5-MeO-DMT, there's a technology of that, the design of how it works. And then now working with it, it's the relationship too, and being with it in relationship to learn the design of that and have that give and take through the medicine of the teachings that come through. This is something that comes over time. And so we actually can receive, like the ayahuasqueros and everything else, is that they're receiving the teachings. And in all of these medicines, my understanding for myself is all these medicines are teachers. So it's up to us to learn to listen and to respond in the right way, and the right way we practice, and the gratitude of being able to even partake in at this moment with these medicine, the gratitude. So we, in the sense of lineage, we lay tobacco, we do sage, we bring ourselves to the moment in a heartfelt way. We release any of the traumas or the things that we've had going on that have us be stuck in that moment or that day. And we honor that moment as we go into the medicine. And this is where all the teachings come, and we're sharing them. And then in some way, they come through the word, and they come into actions, into life. So in that way, you can actually see the structure and the design of it in manifestation of what actually happens in the world. So through all this, the medicines and the plant and the word, then the manifestation of that actually happens. So it's a beautiful system. It's not just like woo, woo, woo. It's like, no, there's a system to it.
You mentioned Mapacho. It's something else I wanted to ask you. In the woods in BC at the Sentinel, and didn't get a chance because, Richard, you struck me as in some moments somewhat of a Mapacho wizard, the way you worked with that plant. And I wanted to ask you what your take is, what your relationship is like with Mapacho, how you use it.
Well, the Mapacho is in the listening of, in this case, Mapacho, but listening to it. It is a teacher. It has its own knowledge of how it wishes to be used, how to honor it, what in relationship to. So it's a beautiful thing to give as the gift for honoring. Nature knows this energy that it carries in the Mapacho, the prayers that holding it is prayer, placing it in a place where we can honor that place and just give offerings. It's a wonderful offering. and then holding it before ceremony as we hold it here and we put it between our fingers and thumb there and we place our prayers in there. And those prayers are done or smoked or laid there. And then through the whole process, you take all the ashes or whatever's being used in the ceremony and you take it out to a mesa to where we honor that and we place it. So there's nothing wasted. Even in the ash, we place and we honor it and we put it back to the earth in this rock mound. And that way it's in respect to all nature, you know, that all ourselves, all nature, the actual journey itself. And in that way, we produce a way of being to go through life. And nature respects that. So in the teachings of it, it's in symbiotic relationship to anything. Whether it be Matapacho, the cedar tree, Jillian, this relationship, we learn to build the relationship. And the only what happens is when we're out of context of that, of separation, is a reminder to ourselves that we're far enough away that we need coming back to ourselves. So if I'm feeling separate, I'm going, oh, blow tobacco, be with the question, and bring myself back to my true innate self. So, so that's a piece.
I just wouldn't want to, if that's okay. Listening to Richard speaking as he just did, Richard was born in New Zealand, very white family, middle class, sort of, you know, in the late 50s. And so if you just knew that about him, you would say, what right does he have to talk about Rinpoche? It's like, who is he to? But if you listen to him, clearly he has a deep connection with it, with that tradition. And so this cultural appropriation thing that gets people so upset, it's like, wait a minute, we do have more than one life. We have many lives. And I've watched Richard over the years just be as a part of him that comes alive that he did not learn from New Zealand or wherever else he has lived in this lifetime. It's clearly come through from previous ones. And so what? It's like, it's to be honored. That's something to be honored and in people and not to be dismissed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I could certainly feel that in observing your relationship with the plants and the nature that surrounds you. You know, it's a very kind of gentle and symbiotic existence that the Sentinel seems to have with the earth there and the surroundings. Yeah. It's like a part of it and helping to sustain it rather than take from it or appropriate from it. So I could feel that. And thank you for clarifying that, because I think it's important, Jillian, what you brought up.
And that, all of that is thanks to Richard. I just watch him, you know, wander around and talk to the land, and it's like, thank you. And it talks back to him. It's beautiful.
The land itself, I mean, it called us in. It definitely called it. It actually originated in about 14 years ago in an ayahuasca ceremony in a vision. And the vision came, there's an old man holding this place and there's rock walls going down to the waterfront and the vision of the mountains and the lake and standing on the hillside there looking down. And the story behind it. So all of these things come through vision. And when we sat on the land, I didn't know originally, but it actually all came through. So oh my goodness. So linear time, it's like goes, you never know when those visions are going to manifest in the world. But
especially with him.
Yeah.
He had lots of them.
So these things happen. Who knows why?
I just pay attention.
And as Jillian said, I'm a regular guy from Auckland, New Zealand, and I'm married to Jillian, and these things, you know, who says?
Yeah, right?
Who's to say? Yeah. Right? It's just what is.
Yeah. It's just what is.
Well, I'm curious, you know, Richard, you kind of mentioned the woo-woo maybe take on some of the things you're saying. And we had started the conversation by talking about the overlap between the clinical and the ceremonial. So to the listener who has listened to you talk about what you just did and thought, that sounds really weird, right? They don't have a context for having a relationship to a plant or listening to a psychedelic. What might you say to them? How might you invite them into this mindset?
Yeah, exactly. It's really the curiosity, right? Like with any question, it's like, oh, I'll just drop all the right or wrong or good or bad and be curious. I mean, I'm not saying this is the way, this is what to do. This is my experience. This is the experience that I have. Your experience is your experience. And if you choose to, be curious. Just like a friend, you would say, oh, tell me more about that. Or, you know, I don't understand. And can you share that with me a bit more? And so there's no defensiveness or anything in it. It's just purely an inquiry and a curiosity. So when I'm stuck in myself, over the years, I'm now nearly 65. I have not always, and I've been hard on myself and everything. But when I got curious about my way of being, what came from that was a freedom, and then a little bit more freedom and a little bit more layer. Because any dogma that is that it's this way or that way is purely coming from it. For me, I'm speaking for myself. Is a shield or a trauma or somewhere I don't want to go. You know, just allowing Jillian to speak what she speaks to and to listen is a practice, right? So just let us all practice together. Let us all take time and listen to each other. Let us be still for a moment and not pre-think what we're going to say to an answer or something. It's already there. So, you know, I'm, this is it. It's just what shows up, and everybody has their opinions, but opinions are opinions. That's it. So the experience, it's in the experience. That's what I would say. It's in the experience. Once a person has experienced and being touched on with that little shy piece of light that goes, and then placing breath on that, going, oh, there's something there. That's what I've been looking for. So it's in the experience. We can talk and talk and talk and read 100 books. You're still not going to give you the experience.
Reminds me of what Ram Dass said. You talked about sitting around the fire in community, and East Forest and John Hopkins took his words, made it into a beautiful song, and in there, Ram Dass says, "Beyond all polarities, I am. Let the judgments and opinions of the mind be the judgments and opinions of the mind." And I love that line.
Me too.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Thank you.
The mind's simply a computer. And it gets programmed from the heart if we let it, and then it really works well.
Well, the computer of my mind crashes often. Needs frequent maintenance. I do love curiosity.
That's good to know then, Steve, right? Mm-hmm. And then how do we reboot you? What's the rebooting for you?
Ibogaine, Steve.
Or come up and do a ceremony, and we'll work in the world of the Jaguar and do that. So when we do that, I will be there right with you. It's not a separate thing. The journey anybody goes through is that the client, the person that we're sitting with, imbibes the medicine, and I imbibe the medicine with that person at the same time, and have done hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. And in that journey we take together, there's miraculous things that happen, and the unexplainable things that you cannot put words to. But it's all in the frequency and the vibration of all these things we think about, thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And, what are we all looking for? We're looking for a piece of freedom from the continuous looping of thought processes and living in peace of our heart. And we're connected to all of us together. You know, there's an individual, but there's no separateness. So, feel welcome anytime, my friend. And you never know what journey we'll go on.
And while that's happening, I'm also present and hold space, which can be quite an adventure at times. Whoa, okay. We're going here. All right.
Well, I'm feeling the call to adventure, so I might make my way up there then.
That would be so lovely. Yeah. That would be so lovely.
I'll join you, Steve. Sounds like a beautiful field trip.
Great idea. Yeah.
PTF podcast field trip. How about it? That'd be awesome.
No, that's exactly right. It's a good possibility. Yeah. There's so much. Yeah.
Well, we have to thank Amanda for setting this up, actually. Amanda, who works with Luminous and who runs the training program. And just recently, in the last few months, we decided that we wanted to offer our clients and just people we know a training that we hadn't tried before. And so we took the Numinous training to make sure that it was what we wanted, and it was beyond what we wanted. It was really beautiful. That's how we met you, Steve. And and so I just wanted to put that into this conversation of gratitude for what Numinous is doing and what all the wonderful people that work for Numinous are up to and holding that integrity in the world and teaching us new, teaching old dogs new tricks.
That's right. Yeah. I could really see through the program, where I was weak.
Yeah.
What I needed to learn more about.
It's like, that was good.
Really great on the practical side of things. But, you know, how about this, you know, how the brain works and everything.
It's wonderful.
Really wonderful to be note that that's where I need more work done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a big kudos to Peyton and his vision for bringing us all together as well. Only in BC, but the founding Numinous. Yeah. What a beautiful outcome of his journey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're happy to support him all the way as much as we can.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Grateful to the two of you for joining us so that old dogs and young dogs alike can learn old and new tricks. And it's just so wonderful to know you two and to hear about how you approach this work. And hopefully our listeners will have benefited as much as Reed and I have from knowing you.
Despite the technical difficulties, thank you. Yeah, it's been lovely.
Yes, yeah. we won't let the robot overlord stop us. We'll have these conversations no matter what.
Right.
That's good.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you both. It's been lovely to chat.
Lovely too. Really appreciate it. Happy Easter, everybody.
Happy Easter.
Likewise.
Psychedelic Therapy Frontiers is brought to you by Numinous, a mental wellness company committed to tackling the global mental health crisis by delivering best-in-class psychedelic-assisted therapies, contributing to the body of primary and clinical psychedelic research, and fostering healing through community connection and social responsibility. You can learn more about Numinous at numinous.com. That's N-U-M-I-N-U-S.com. If you enjoyed the show today and you want to support us, here's how you do it. Rate and review the show on platforms like Apple Podcasts and Spotify, subscribe to the Numinous YouTube channel, like the videos, and share it. Share the show or clips of the show with someone that you think will enjoy it. Hey listeners, it's Steve Thayer here, letting you know that Numinous offers unique training opportunities for mental health practitioners to develop their skills and expertise in offering psychedelic-assisted therapy to clients. These courses are carefully crafted by Numinous professionals like myself, Reed, Joe, and others, and offer a variety of high-quality learning experiences. So, if you would like to learn more about these trainings, you can find the link in the show notes below, or you can visit numinous.com/training. That's numinous.com/training. The content of this podcast does not constitute medical advice or mental health treatment. Consult with a medical or mental health professional if you believe you are in need of mental health treatment.